This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Judges. On today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will be teaching in Judges chapter 15.
Samson's problem was that he liked to chase skirts. He had an eye for the ladies. Samson could slay 1,000 Philistines, but not his own libido. You might say Samson was a he-man with a she problem. Did you know the Illinois Department of Natural Resources reports that 17,000 deer are struck by motorists every year on state roads? And the peak season for roadkill is late November, because that's the season when the bucks like to mate. The state wildlife director makes the statement, "The deer are concentrating almost exclusively on reproductive activities and are a lot less wary than they normally would be." That's Samson's problem. He was always concentrating on reproductive activities. Sex was his Achilles heel. This is why we need convictions. Despite what the media tells us, life is more than sex. Oh, sure, sex is pleasurable, but the pleasure is physical and fleeting, whereas our deepest needs are spiritual. And always remember, physical pleasure can never satisfy a spiritual need, never. You see, the key to a lasting, permanent fulfillment is not physical intimacy with another person, but spiritual intimacy with God. Well, verse 3 tells us, "Then his father and mother said to him, 'Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines?'" They knew this was a violation of God's word. "And Samson said to his father, 'Get her for me, for she pleases me.'"
Huh, get her for me, she pleases me.
I mean, that's the impression you get about him. I mean, the guy was all about his own desires. That's all he cared about. "But his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord." And here's the strange thing. I'm sure that God never approved of Samson marrying a Philistine, but he was about to use Samson's selfishness for his own glory. For God was seeking an occasion to move against the Philistines, for at that time the Philistines had dominion over Israel. So Samson went down to Timnah with his father and mother and came to the vineyards of Timnah. Wait a minute, Samson. You're a Nazarite. You're not supposed to be hanging out in vineyards. Remember your vow? Now, to his surprise, a young lion came roaring against him. Samson's on the road to Timnah to see his sweetie when suddenly this man-eating lion comes out of the bushes and attacks him. Verse 6, "And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and he tore the lion apart as one would have torn apart a young goat, though he had nothing in his hand." But notice this, he did not tell his father or his mother what he had done. Now, if God had done this miracle for you or me, we would stand on the lion's carcass. You know, we'd be standing there with one foot up on the lion, you know, kind of standing there like this. And he'd have somebody take a photo of us, and we'd post it on the internet. That's exactly what we'd do. We'd send the photo into Calvary Chapel magazine so they could publish it and put our name underneath it. To Samson's credit, God did this great work. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him, but he took no glory for what had happened. "Then he went down and he talked with the woman, and she pleased Samson well." It was lust at first sight. This relationship develops. After some time, when he had returned to her, he turned aside to see the carcass of the lion, and behold, a swarm of bees and honey were in the carcass of the lion. The honey made for a nice snack, and the whole picture became the inspiration for a riddle that we're going to get to in a moment. But notice this, long before his infamous haircut, Samson broke his vow to God. He broke it first by going to those vineyards, by touching the fruit of the vine. He broke it the second time by touching something that was dead, that dead lion. He broke his vow long before the cutting of his hair. Verse 9, "He took some of it in his hands and he went along eating. Now when he came to his father and mother, he gave some to them and they also ate. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey out of the carcass of the lion. So his father went down to the woman, and Samson gave a feast there, for young men used to do so. Samson threw himself a bachelor's party. Now, the Hebrew word translated feast means drinking bout or drinking celebration. And knowing what kind of guy Samson was, it's hard to imagine that he was content with soda pops. He was probably hitting the wine pretty heavy. Again, violating his vow, the first part of his vow, touching the fruit of the vine. And it happened when they saw him that they brought 30 companions to be with him. If you got to have a party, you got to have somebody with you. So they brought 30 guys. Then Samson said to them, "Let me pose a riddle to you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within the 7 days of the feast, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." Now, Samson's a little sauced here. He's been hitting his wine, and he proposes a friendly wager. He's going to stump them with a riddle and get him 30 new suits from the men's warehouse. "But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing." And they said to him, "Pose your riddle, that we may hear it." So he said to them, "Out of the eater came something to eat, and out of the strong came something sweet." Now for 3 days they could not explain the riddle. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they said to Samson's wife, "Entice your husband, that he may explain the riddle to us, or else we will burn you in your father's house with fire. Have you invited us in order to take what is ours? Is that not so?" I mean, the Philistines don't want to lose 30 changes of raiment. And so they threaten Samson's bride. "Either get us the riddle, the solution to the riddle, or we're going to burn you and your father's house to the ground." Then Samson's wife wept on him. Has your wife ever wept on you? I mean, she just started the sobbing act, you know. Started with the tears. That's how my wife gets out of those speeding tickets. She just knows how to turn on the tears. And so she, Mrs., you know, girl from Timnah, she starts crying. And this beautiful Philistine babe, she's a manipulator. And she makes him feel guilty. And she says to him, "You only hate me. You do not love me. You have posed a riddle to the sons of my people, but you have not explained it to me. Sonny, honey, you left me out of your game. If you really love me, you'll whisper to me the answer to that riddle." And he said to her, "Look, I have not explained it to my father or my mother, so should I explain it to you?" Now she had wept on him the 7 days while the feast lasted. I mean, she had to put up with this for 7 days. And it happened on the seventh day that he told her because she pressed him so much. Then she explained the riddle to the sons of her people. You know, it's interesting. Samson could kill a lion with his bare hands. He could slay a band of Philistines, but he lacked the strength to say no to a woman. This was his weakness. And so the men of the city said to him on the seventh day before the sun went down, "What is sweeter than honey? And what is stronger than a lion?" They answered the riddle. And immediately, Samson smells a rat. He knows he's been double-crossed. And in verse 18, Samson shows off his way with words. And he said to them, "If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle." Boy had a way with words. Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. And he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, and gave the changes of clothing to those who had explained the riddle. Samson gave them the clothes, but he took them off the backs of dead Philistines. Hey, when we want clothes, we go to the mall. Samson went to the brawl. He mauled the Philistines. He took their clothes and paid off his bet. And so his anger was aroused and he went back to his father's house. Well, his wife's betrayal had upset him. I mean, he was hurt. And so he goes home now to sort out his feelings. In the meantime, Samson's wife was given to his companion who had been his best man. Oh, no. Talk about adding insult to injury. These Philistines better brace themselves. When Samson finds out what his father-in-law's done, he's not going to like it. Chapter 15. After a while, in the time of wheat harvest, which was late May, early June, it happened that Samson visited his wife with a young goat. Now, a young goat was the Hebrew equivalent at that time of a dozen roses and a box of candy. He's thought this over now, and he's concluded that he really does love his bride, and he's going to forgive her for her act of betrayal, and so he's coming to her to make up. And he said, "Let me go into my wife, into her room." But her father would not permit him to go in. Her father said, "I really thought that you thoroughly hated her. Therefore, I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister better than she? Please take her instead." He tries to pawn off the baby sister on Samson. Samson said to them, "This time I shall be blameless regarding the Philistines if I harm them." In other words, it's payback time. Then Samson went and caught 300 foxes. The Philistines took Samson's foxy woman from him, and now he's going to take 300 of their foxes. And he took torches, and he turned the foxes tail to tail, and he put a torch between each pair of tails. Now, when he had set the torches on fire, and you know what a fox does when its tail's on fire? Man, it runs. He let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up both the shocks and the standing grain, as well as the vineyards and the olive groves. Their whole harvest was devastated. Verse 6. Then the Philistines said, "Who has done this?" And they answered, "Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he has taken his wife and given her to his companion." So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire. They torched Samson's in-laws. The love of his life dies in the flames. You could say Samson and the Philistines were fighting fire with fire. Samson said to them, "Since you would do a thing like this, I will surely take revenge on you, and after that I will cease." And so he attacked them hip and thigh with a great slaughter. Then he went down and dwelt in the cleft of the rock of Edom. He retreated to the borders of Israel. Edom was south of Bethlehem. But notice the phrase, he attacked them hip and thigh. This might have been a wrestling term, believe it or not. In other words, he attacked them hip and thigh. In other words, he disjointed their leg. He pulled their thigh out from their hip. Their hip socket. He dismembered them, in other words. He thoroughly pulled apart their hip and thigh. Or it could have just meant he stomped them. I mean, he thoroughly trounced the Philistines. Either way, it was pretty brutal. Verse 9. Now the Philistines went up, encamped in Judah, and deployed themselves against Lehi. In other words, the Philistines come to arrest Samson. And the men of Judah said, "Why have you come up against us?" So they answered, "We haven't come up against you, you know, but we have come up to arrest Samson, to do to him as he has done to us." Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, "Do you know that the Philistines rule over us? What is this you have done to us?" They were a bunch of wimps themselves, weren't they? And he said to them, "As they did to me, so I've done to them." But they said to him, "We have come down to arrest you that we may deliver you into the hand of the Philistines." Now, you know, you really start to feel sorry for Samson. His newlywed wife betrays him. Then she's lost in a fire. Now his fellow countrymen come wanting to arrest him and extradite him and turn him over to the enemy. He's had a hard few weeks. Then Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not kill me yourselves." And so they spoke to him, saying, "No, but we will tie you securely and deliver you into their hand, but we will surely not kill you." And they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. And these new ropes, they were new ropes. They were strong ropes. They were unbreakable ropes. Now, when he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting against him. Oh, you can hear them hooping and hollering. I mean, they saw the ropes around his hands. They saw that he was offering no resistance. They thought they had him. But then the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the ropes that were on his arms became like flax that is burned in the fire. Suddenly, the ropes just flaked away and crumbled, like when you take that poker and you hit the last piece of wood in a fire that's almost gone, and the thing just kind of crumbles and flakes into pieces. Suddenly, those ropes just flaked off of his hands, and his bonds broke loose from his hands, verse 15, and he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached out his hand and took it, and killed 1,000 men with it. 1,000 men were too few. 20,000 men would have been too few, for the Spirit of God fought for Samson. Now I picture a posse bringing Samson through a narrow canyon. There are rock walls on all sides. There's slight openings around him. And then suddenly he breaks free from his bonds, and the Philistine soldiers try to capture him. And in order to do so, to get into this narrow place where he's at, they start coming in small bands of two or three. They try to wiggle through these narrow passages, and it allows Samson to pick them off one or two at a time. And over the course of hours, he kills 1,000 Philistines. Verse 16. Then Samson said, with the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have slain 1,000 men. The phrase heaps upon heaps is a wordplay. In the Hebrew, the word resembles donkey. And so Samson is, in essence, mocking the Philistines. He's saying, donkeys were slain with a donkey's jawbone. That's what he's saying. You might say Samson is boasting. And you might even say he's trash-talking a little bit. The Jewish historian Josephus, he says that this conquest over the Philistines went to Samson's head, that he became proud. He thought he had become invincible. Josephus says that verse 16 was really just a small portion of a much longer victory song or a boasting song that Samson sang. Apparently, Samson was jawing about the jawbone. Josephus puts it this way. Samson said that this did not come to pass by the assistance of God, but that his success was ascribed to his own courage. Proving that there were actually two jawbones of a donkey at work in this story. And so it was, when he had finished speaking, implying that he had spoken for a long time. This guy was just trash talking, you know, yipping and hooting and hollering and bragging about himself and all. That he threw the jawbone from his hand and he called that place Ramoth Lehi. And the name of the place, Ramoth Lehi, means jawbone heights. Now, let me read to you Josephus' comments in their entirety because they explain what happens next. Upon this slaughter, Samson was too proud of what he had performed and said that this did not come to pass by the assistance of God, but that his success was to be ascribed to his own courage, and vaunted himself that it was out of a dread for him that some of his enemies fell, and the rest ran away upon his use of the jawbone. But when a great thirst came upon him, he considered that human courage is nothing, and bear his testimony that all is to be ascribed to God. And in verse 18, Samson learns his lesson, for then he became very thirsty. So he cried out to the Lord and said, "You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised." And so God split the hollow place that is in Lehi, and water came out, and he drank, and his spirit returned, and he revived. Therefore, he called its name En Hakkori, which means spring of the caller, which is in Lehi to this day. And he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. Chapter 16. Then Samson went to Gaza, a major Philistine city. And he saw a harlot there, and he went into her. And he must have tried to slip in undercover. But there's a leak. For when the Gazites were told Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night at the gate of the city. The Gaza SWAT team locked down the city gates and they set a trap for Samson. Now remember, ancient gates were serious fortifications. They were deeply embedded in the ground. They were thick and strong and heavy. They were able to resist an entire army. Verse 2, they were quiet all night saying, in the morning, when it is daylight, we will kill him. This was the Philistine plan. Samson had a plan of his own. And Samson lay low till midnight. Then he arose at midnight, took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two gateposts, pulled them up, bar and all, put them on his shoulders, and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron, which was some distance. Imagine the Philistines camped around the gates, expecting to pounce on Samson at daybreak. Suddenly, around midnight, Samson is ripping these gates out of the ground, and he uses the iron bars to bulldoze over the Philistines who oppose him. Trust me, it was a huge embarrassment for the Gaza Police Department. And it was proof that not even city gates, strong fortifications, can stop a man empowered by the Spirit of God. Hey, a single man full of the Holy Spirit can defeat an entire army. And yet, the source of his power was also a problem. For he was filled with the Holy Spirit. And this is why Samson's life was such an enigma. Samson was a walking contradiction. Samson is familiar with God's power, but he is a stranger to God's purity. Here is a man who spends the night with a hooker, no less. He walks out of a brothel, not a chapel, and God uses him to do the miraculous, to win a great victory. How can this be? Perhaps nobody in the scriptures demonstrates as much a contradiction between his personal life and his public ministry as does Samson. How can a man be used so powerfully by God while being so nonchalant about obedience to God? There can be only one answer. It's God's mercy. God does use imperfect vessels. He supplies his servants on-the-job training. He fixes us on the fly. He never waits till we're perfect before he uses us. He works in us and on us and through us all at the same time. But don't make the wrong assumptions. Just because God continues to use you doesn't mean he approves of everything you do. And this is where pastors get into problems. They get up, they preach sermons. People are saved. They come to know Christ all the time. There's a secret sin in his life, and they assume that God doesn't care, that God's overlooking that. Don't make that mistake. It's not true. God was extremely concerned with Samson's sin. In fact, we see in chapter 16 that there comes a point when enough is enough. Samson crosses a line. He goes too far, and the power he's come to expect and believes will always be there will suddenly be gone. The life of Samson teaches us that there is a definite point. There is a line that you cross, and God says, enough. He withdraws his blessing. He puts you on the shelf. The giver of the Great Commission puts you out of commission if you cross that line. And here's the added problem. You don't really know where God draws that line until it's been crossed.
You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. Pastor Sandy comes to us from Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, located in Atlanta, Georgia. Are you in the area? We would love to see you on a Sunday morning at 9:30 or 11:15. For more information, head over to our website, sandyadams.org, and select the About tab. Once again, that website is sandyadams.org. In today's message, Pastor Sandy continued through the book of Judges. This book details the history of Israel in the time after they were led by Joshua into the Holy Land, but before they had their first king. Throughout the book, we've watched the people cycle in and out of following the true God and being pulled away by the religions of the people around them. The book ends with these chilling words. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Sound familiar? If you find yourself unsure of what's right and wrong because of the teaching of the world around you, be sure to come back and listen again. Pastor Sandy brings sound biblical teaching as he goes through the Bible book by book, verse by verse. You'll hear the truth loud and clear and learn how to stick to that truth in this corrupt world. We're so glad you decided to spend time with us here today. That's all we have for now, but be sure to come back again for more right here on Sandy Adams Radio.